Hello, good morning, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is International Flavor. You are listening to Damn Radio. And here on International Flavor, the news just tastes better. Why? Because it's coming from me. That's why. And I want to discuss quite a few things today. I've got some news going on in real life news. We have been located, let's see, been working on some projects out of our building. And the signs are going up, and that makes me happy. So our Civic Outlaw sign, our MOLAG sign, our Modern Law Ecosystem sign are all going up on the building. And finally, I feel kind of like the idea that's been bouncing around in my head, some of them for years and some of them not as long, is, you know, finally a reality, because, you know, it's out there, and I like that part. Plus, we got a lot of information, a lot of requests from people that run convenience stores, bars, small restaurants that say they want to join the fight against the Attorney General's office, and I like that. You know, we have the lawsuit is progressing. There's a hearing next Monday in Jefferson City. You can get on and check it out. Let's see if I can give you the case number. You can pull it up and follow it on CaseNet. I was thinking that I would put the calendar of it on our website at MOLAG or at Civic Outlaws or both, but I'm the worst blogger. I need a blogging assistant. I'd like somebody who can blog and can take care of all these things. I've got too much in the day to keep me going. And I'm telling you that I believe this case, for several reasons, is going to be a Supreme Court, some kind of a little bit of a bellwether, or at least on the issues anyway. You know, it's we have a great lawyer that is handling this suit for us. If you have heard of the name Travis Noble, I should advertise for him because he is truthfully one of the most gifted litigators, probably the most gifted litigator I have ever seen. And he is amazing in what he can do in front of a jury. And the truth is, I don't know how many jury trials, I think, in a period of 15 years of practicing law, I think I did one right away, right when I started practicing law, and I didn't even know the case. It was just set for trial, and my partner at the time gave me a, he's like, you know, we're going to have to try it. He goes, why don't you try it? They aren't offering us any money. We lost. We got some money, but nothing serious. It was just a small little fender bender case. It wasn't anything to go on. But I was never afraid of standing in front of a jury and telling a story or trying something to the court or whatever. That's what the law is for. But most lawyers are pussies, pardon my French, and they don't want to go to trial. And I don't understand why. You know, they convince their clients that a deal is better. Sometimes it's worth the fight. You know, it's a risk. I mean, here I sit with no law license because some asshole said that he could destroy me. And I was like, no, you can't. That's not what the system is all about. Of course, I found out I'm wrong. If the state wants to get you, the state's going to get you. And if some a-hole in the Missouri bar that they want to get you, they're corrupt up there. They have procedures to take care of bad eggs to get rid of them. And I'm not a bad egg. You know, I've been accused of being a bad egg, and I fought them all the way to the United States Supreme Court. I don't like this. I'm not as large a proponent as I used to be of the system, but I fought them. And if I believe in something, I'm going to fight it. And I don't want to say I don't care. I do care deeply. I think what they did to me is injustice. But it's not about me anymore. It's about when you know I was one of those guys. I sued the state. This is back when Attorney General was Jay Nixon, and his son and my son were the very best of friends. And we ran into Jay Jr. all the time, and my son was always over at their house. And, you know, you learn some lessons on life from a-holes like that. You know, it's all about the power. And, you know, he ran the gauntlet and became a governor, and I'm not against him for it. God love him for it. You know, there's got to be people like that that want to do it. But that guy, he wouldn't even look at me. It was really weird. It was like everybody else was nice. This is back when he was AG and stuff, and it was just so odd to me. And he told my son that he wouldn't give him a recommend when he went to, what kind of crap is that? You know, your sons run cross country together from eighth grade until seniors, and they're just idiots together, just like young men are. And you let them be that way, and you let my son over at your house constantly, but you won't give him a recommend. And I don't care if you give him a recommend or not. I don't really care. But if you're doing it because I am somehow, I don't know what he said. He told my son it wouldn't look right. Like, who the hell's going to investigate my, you know, his letter of recommend from the governor and say it wouldn't look right? I mean, that's Andrew asked him for one and he wouldn't give it to him. And gave one to everybody else on the cross country team, but you know, wouldn't for Andrew. And so this is the type of people that I despise in politics, in government, in that hold stuff over innocent people's heads, that attack. That it's all about the narrative. It's all about, I mean, his narrative. You know, your dad sues the state of Missouri all the time. Sure do. But I only do it if I think that somebody did something wrong. You know, somebody gets killed by a cop, I'm suing. Somebody gets raped in the prison, I'm suing. So, you know, that story needs to be told. That's somebody's life you're destroying. And I believe that's what's happening here in all of this crap that is being thrown out there by Catherine Hanaway. I don't think she's a Democrat. Oh, my God. Sam, you're a moron. Forgot my glasses. Anyway, there's always a spare. Hang on. Got some spares. I want to go through this because the history of this and where we're missing the point in this is the confusion that reigns in the state of Missouri. So I posted on our blog on Civic, and we are going to get to some international news today. You know, I was the Civic Outlaws sign, you know, that I wanted to talk about, and all of, you know, I got this picture on my phone, and you open it up and you see your phone. It's like, ah, it's looking pretty cool. I like that. And secondly, I got another text this morning from my Florida Russian lady who tells me, and she sent me a picture of it, of my Ruskaya visa. And so I have my visa, Trioklietnaya, Mnogokratnaya, which means 3-year multiple entry. And I can once again travel to Russia. And I plan to do so for New Year's. I want to go to St. Petersburg. I also want to hit the Economic Forum. There's a pretty big one coming up. And then I'm hoping to get to New Delhi in September. And might go visit my wife in Egypt also. That would be kind of fun. We're trying to figure something out on that. But I got a lot of crap going on, and I'm too busy. And it's impacting my ability to travel and do what I like to do in my old age, right? But, you know, sometimes the fight is worth it. And so I now have my visa, so this is a good deal, and I'm going to check that out. But think about this. The position that we have is positioned for Supreme Court review. There's a process for bumping a case straight to the Supreme Court, but it's pretty damn rare, and usually it's only from the appellate court. I suppose you could make an ask, and there's you know, Rule 82, 83, and 84. You can look up those if you want to check out the possibilities of bumping something or getting a writ of some sort. And there's a hearing coming up this week and this coming week. And it's going to be interesting to me. I'm just dropping stuff. But anyway, I think this case, based on the history, you know, of what is going on, the Supreme Court of Missouri, I imagine, will be. So on 536.140, especially subparagraph 3, the RSMO, that is the one that says that any agency interpretations, any determinations of, you know, deference is dead, basically. So any decisions made by an administrative agency, including, by the way, Catherine Hanaway, just because she's a lawyer and allegedly the senior lawyer in the state of Missouri, I kind of disagree with that. You know, Supreme Court guys are also lawyers. You know, you can't be a Supreme Court dude without being a lawyer. And I think they outrank, if, you know, if they can tell the attorney general what to do, I believe they outrank them. But there you have it. I don't know. But she thinks she's she thinks she's God's answers. That's it. She speaks from on high. And so, you know, I think the Supreme Court eventually is going to have to resolve the questions of general interest to the state and importance to the state and re-examine existing interpretations by Hanaway, by alcohol tobacco control, re-examining these interpretations when statewide confusion reigns like it does right now. So Missouri Article 5, Constitution, Section 10, Rules 83, Rules 83.01 and 02, this Judge Ross order in the Eastern District of Missouri have created all kinds, well, the order itself created this. It didn't really create confusion. It only created confusion because Catherine Hanaway took it to beat people over the head with it and to change the law. And she doesn't get to do that. That is not allowed, and it's not allowed under Missouri law. It just is not. When you interpret, you're not allowed to interpret. You're only allowed to carry out the law. And even she, in her recent article, like I talked about yesterday, can't determine what the definition is of an illegal gaming machine. She can't do it. She acknowledges a gray area, but then she says, well, you know what? It's not gray anymore. I say it's not, so therefore it's not. But the federal court declined to issue declaratory relief in count 7 of the TNT torch deal because a declaration of Missouri gambling law, this is what they said in the judgment, the Judge Ross, because the declaration of Missouri gambling law belongs in a Missouri appellate court. And he later entered a limited declaration after trial anyway because the state resolution remained elusive. And then he denied interlocutory appeal on that particular issue because the proposed federal appeal wouldn't advance the remaining federal case. Yeah, but he didn't need it to make the federal case. The jury had already spoken and said that they thought those machines were illegal. So that sequence doesn't reflect any sort of statewide certainty, certainly not from the federal. It's the federal court's recognition of an empty record of statewide a certainty and a full record of uncertainty, and it calls for Missouri Supreme Court review or reworking by the legislature, which they're trying to do and have tried for 2 years. So, the petition that has been filed on behalf of MOLAG, MOLAG.org, go on out there, check it out, or go to civicoutlaws.com, go to the blog section and check out the article I wrote in the petition that's been filed by Travis Noble. And the petition presents an independent public accountability issue that concerns the ATC's leadership and Hanaway's interpretation of legislation. She is not allowed to do that. So count 7 alleges in that petition that an indefinitely acting alcohol tobacco official, now this part is an irritant too, She's an acting alcohol tobacco official who hasn't even been properly appointed. She's been there for years, and they haven't even bothered to appoint and confirm her. She's always the acting supervisor. Why is that? You can't find anybody, Governor? Or it's actually supposed to be Mark James, put him up, and then they don't. But once this case is presently in circuit court, but I'm certain, well, what do I know? I'm not a lawyer. But, well, you know, I feel reasonably convinced that this case will probably end up in front of the appellate court, at least, if not the Supreme Court, discussing these issues. If it goes that, you know, the effort is to try to get this to go fast. And I tell you what, in my view, what Catherine Hanaway is doing is destroying business, taking revenue away from the state. I mean, take it from the point of view of, you know, you get to tell somebody what you think they should do with their lives. You can't sit in a convenience store and put money in a machine. Look, there are people that put money on a stick and tape some string to it so they can pull it back out after they put it in. There are people printing their own winning tickets, you know, and turning them in. They're counterfeiting these tickets. So prosecute that, you know. Help out the people trying to make a little bit of money. Anyway, the fact is confusion reigns. And think about this. It this in the case from Molag presents quite a few important questions. Whether a person, a ATC or administrative person, can interpret a relevant statute, or if they can only carry out a relevant statute, especially after 536.140, or whether the present threat posture, like the Attorney General's public releases and demand letters, ATC advisories, renewal oaths, inspection checklists, can treat, you know, can be treated as if the checklist somehow establishes illegality under 532. Because some officer, untrained in machines, walks in and goes, yeah, it looks like a slot machine. That looks like cocaine on the counter. It might only be flour, but hell with it. I'm charging it. You know, you don't need any evidence. It's a machine. You go in and you look at a machine, and that machine, you're the independent guy that declares it illegal. All I want is for them to have some definition of what it is up front. And even Catherine Hanaway is asking for in her own article, as she said yesterday, that, or she didn't, as I told you yesterday, can't do it. Well, let's talk a little bit about the municipal experience about these statewide machines, because basically it just shows you the statewide confusion all over the place. Is the confusion, it's not a uniform legal standard. It's not the same. Lori, Missouri, attempted a licensing and testing model. So I've got some reports of what they were doing and that I've obtained. And these reports show that they were getting machines examined and determining that they were legal. So Lori used a coin-operated amusement license application. They had sworn statements by the person that installed them that machines wouldn't be used as gambling devices and would comply with the law. They collected machine-specific exhibits. That's what they did. This is what's different from what's going on at the AG right now. They're just, no, they're all illegal. Yell it at the top of your lungs, and people will back off. You're powerful. They're not. And so, you know, if you shout out there a couple of things, these are illegal. Well, people are going to collapse, and that's what they are doing, and it's wrong. They required sworn statements that they wouldn't be used for gambling purposes and they would apply with the law. And they collect machine information. They rely on independent testing labs. And there's a place called Eclipse Compliance Testing that would turn back reports on some of these. And what they did was talk about what the definition does say and say whether or not it complied with that definition in the opinion of the person. Look at it. That's at least something. It's still confusing, by the way, because there is no statewide definition of what that means. And there isn't any real definition. Okay. So what Hannaway is trying to do and is make her own definition. And but she's not doing it against Torch. She made a deal with Torch. Their stuff still gets to sit out there. And if the legislature ever does act, all they got to do is turn them back on. But everybody else she's targeting, destroying, filing felony charges on, seizing their money, seizing their machines. Why isn't she seizing all the machines at Torch? I'm not recommending that she do so. I think she needs to treat everybody equally, and she's not. If you're going out and destroying the lives and businesses of people, you're not for Missouri. Hell no. What are you for? You're for some I don't know what, pulpit slapping, no gambling. Well, people are gambling anyway. And if you want to call this gambling, I don't. I don't call that gambling. For me, gambling is craps, blackjack, and roulette sometimes, and poker, definitely, Texas Hold'em. And that's my preferred gambling method, and I enjoy all those things. I don't do them as often as I used to, but, if you got a few, dollars unspoken for, if you want to spend them that way, go ahead. If you want to go pump 10 bucks and give it all up to a slot machine, God love you for it. Money makes the world go round, and that's how people make business, and it's an evening. If you choose to go to the Elks Lodge or the VFW and throw some money in a machine, great. So Lori was trying to comply or license it and discuss what they could do on a local level, and they tried to make a legislation. Springfield took a different route. It adopted something called Council Bill 2024-19, and it banned any entertainment devices that offered a monetary prize and later announced 36 citations under that ordinance. Belton, the city of Belton, considered a ban. They face business owner objections, but this is how we make a living. What are you doing? And then notice concerns, and then they just paused it because of all the confusion. They paused it to study the regulations. Kansas City enacted what they call file number 250832 to prohibit certain gaming and electronic machines. They created their own definition, is what my point is. Anything that offered a monetary prize, they tried to simplify it, and they required a 90-day report on enforcement and public education. They wanted to figure out, why? Because nobody knows the answer. The legislature hasn't defined it, Columbia, the state of Columbia, they passed a May 2026 ordinance restricting gray or no-chance machines, what they call them, with public reporting recognizing the continued problems with the legal structure of all this in the state of Missouri. These aren't minor variations in wording. They're different governance choices, licensing, testing, local prohibition. Do we want to put them in and charge them a fee? Take a local tax? What are we trying to do? Some people pause the study, a local citation enforcement, and then reporting requirements. The statewide dispute has left city clerks, police departments, the cops don't know. Well, how are they going to tell their guys and say, here's the regulation, and when the attorney general can't read it and determine what it is? Nobody knows what a gray machine is, not without some testing. And so you don't just get to go in and arrest people. If that guy doesn't stand up for his felonies, I'll be seriously depressed. The guy pleaded guilty down in Springfield. I tell you what, I'd have never recommended that. Unless somebody's sitting there with real slot machines that you would normally see in a casino, and they're really pumping out coins at the bottom, and you go turn them in and you get your cash. You know, if they're pumping out cash or coins out of the bottom, that's different. But what is the push machine? You know, that little push machine that you see somewhere that you put in a quarter and you push it out? Is that gambling? What about the claw machine getting you a prize? Is that gambling? I mean, what else is it? That's something of value. Maybe they're only against money, or maybe they're against Chuck E. Cheese. I don't know. Maybe she doesn't like it. But these aren't minor wording variations. This is a statewide dispute without any guidance. And the guidance you are getting is flawed, okay, because that's a dictatorial stand. Like the guy who said he could destroy me and I never listened to him. You know, it's like, no, you can't. The system won't allow that. Don't trust the system. Don't trust this system either, because they'll destroy you. This lady will happily destroy you. Doesn't matter if you've been a business that owns 50 convenience stores, you're a bigger target. Why? Because she gets to punch you in the face and say, on my way to being governor, I destroyed these guys. You know, I don't want a governor like that in the first place. And in the second place, this is just wrong. Live and let live. Libertarian. You know, let's what we call it, Missourian. I don't know. I've lived here long enough to make it, you know, to maybe count myself as a Missourian. Let's talk about enforcement and the inconsistencies in enforcement, right? The Attorney General's public material describes this statewide campaign to destroy people. But the campaign itself demonstrates, her actions demonstrate the absence of a uniform standard. There's no uniformity here. It's nonsense. It's all over the freaking map. The Green County Attorney General announced two felony counts of first degree promoting gambling and a civil action and nuisance involving 12 machines at a convenience store. She said it's a nuisance. But in Dunklin County, the AG announced 5 civil lawsuits against retail locations. How come she's not, arresting them? And she referenced local criminal charges. You know, maybe somebody's got some misdemeanors there. In St. Francis County, the AG announced execution of a search warrant at the Sit and Spin. They seized 13 machines, a kiosk, and cash, and 13 felony counts against Robert John Orr. Okay, felonies. There you go, felonies. The recent AG MSHP 5 location sting. You know, this is our vice squad operation. Is their public materials say 35 devices, $58,815 seized, and this same operation produced 21 felony counts of first degree promoting gambling for 4 locations, and then curiously, 5 misdemeanor counts of second degree promoting gambling for a different location. So the same thing is being charged differently, depending on what? We don't know. But it's various and sundry. I think it's probably based on the evidence you have or you don't have. If you had something, and you know what my biggest problem is with this, is you just go on a raid. You pick up machines. You don't know why you're going on the raid. You just select. The problem is how you pick the raid location. Okay? You aren't raiding places that got torch machines, are you? And they're still sitting there. Those machines are illegal. You know, those machines are illegal. And you don't want to seize them. You don't want to take that money. You made a deal. And so you get to go after everybody else. You know, and what happens when the legislature licenses these things? Like they're probably gonna next year. There's a big outcry about this stuff. Torches are still sitting there. Everybody else is out of business. You've destroyed their lives, their livelihood. Tell me that that's equal treatment under the law. Tell me. Somebody, tell me. 573-746-8020. Tell me how equal that is. And then let's talk about this federal court order. Does it strengthen or weaken her argument for some kind of a court review? You know, she said in her article in the St. Louis Mag, one of the quotes was she said, oh, we look forward to a statewide ruling. Well, if you know you need a statewide ruling, why are you declaring your own Your own. So is there confusion that reigns? Seriously, is there confusion that reigns on this topic? I don't think so. The federal district court order, the state's public posture after that, relies heavily on this TNT Torch civil litigation. That case might be relevant to the Torch machines, but it isn't a statewide criminal code, and it isn't a substitute for machine-specific analysis. And the sequence of Judge Ross's own orders is the best evidence of this. Early in the case, earlier, Judge Ross dismissed count 7, and he said he did it on abstention and comity. Count 7 asked for declaratory judgment that Torch devices were illegal gambling devices and slot machines under Missouri law. He said, that isn't for me. The court concluded that the federal declaration would offend the principles of comity because a declaration of state law was unnecessary to resolve the federal claims. That's what comity, you know, equates to. You don't really need it. Why are we answering questions that aren't presented? He said, in that judgment, he said, first of all, it's not my place. Second of all, I don't need it. The jury can find that these machines violated a particular statute. They can find that based on the evidence presented, and he didn't need to. Well, then he did it anyway. So it stated initially, the initial one where he said he wasn't going to do it, it stated that any holding he would give or that should come out should issue from a Missouri appellate court, given the importance of the state interest. He said it's a very important state interest, but that's not important to Hanaway. Like, well, the judge went against himself, so here we are. It emphasizes the statewide political and procedural history, and he said it was far more complex and continued in various state offices and courts inside of Missouri. That was his initial ruling. That's document 312, is where he refused. He dismissed count 7 because count 7 was asking for declaratory relief. And that initial ruling's powerful statement. The federal court itself recognized the legality of these devices under Missouri law is a question of statewide public importance, properly suited for Missouri appellate resolution. If that's true, in March 2025, which that was the date he made the decision, it's even more true now that Missouri municipalities, prosecutors, alcohol, tobacco, and the AG with her minions and her vice squads, with retailers and liquor licenses, everybody's confronting this issue statewide. Later, in document 437, I think this was February of this year, Judge Ross revisited count setting after a jury verdict on false advertising and unfair competition, and a specific trial record, including only Torch devices, which they reviewed and had experts testify as to what's this machine, what's that machine, right? And the court entered a limited declaratory judgment that the Torch devices marketed and distributed by defendants in that case are gambling devices under Section 572.010 and illegal when operated outside a casino. But the same order limits its use. The court described the ruling as based on evidence at trial, the jury's actual findings, the expert testimony, and the court's review of applicable law. The declaration wasn't a statewide list of machines that are illegal. It wasn't a rule. It wasn't an ATC licensing standard, and it's no binding adjudication against any non-party. That is the mistake that the Attorney General is making. And she's doing it. to show that she's tough on drugs. She didn't set task force. Vice Squad. We need that Vice Squad to come in guns blazing and take out those people taping string to $100 bills, you know, and putting it in a machine and pulling it back out. Oh, my God. But this talks about the continued uncertainty. The court stated that it had wrestled with comity at each and every stage and changed its own course due to ongoing Missouri delay, inconsistent outcome, and resulting uncertainty in the state system. What he's saying is, in this case, the one TNT against Torch, he didn't have enough guidance from Missouri. And so he was making a decision in this case. And not every machine everywhere. He limited that. Hanaway doesn't tell you that part. And that's wrong. So our request for emergency relief and her using this sort of ruling as a club should be well placed, in my view. You know, people should jump on board and beat the crap out of this concept. It's not right. So the question remains unresolved, and the question remains unresolved so much so that a federal judge first abstained. He was confused. He first abstained, said he's not going to rule on it, later declared it only as to Torch devices on trial, and then refused interlocutory appeal and acknowledged the statewide state system uncertainty. You know, that's crazy. Torch sought that interlocutory review on whether federal abstention principles require the district court to abstain, that he should have abstained because he said he reversed himself on his own. He just reversed himself. That's going to create problems later one way or the other. And it costs people a lot of money for a judge to change his statements midstream. If a judge says something, you'd like to think that they'd say the same thing 6 months later. And he didn't. That doesn't make sense to me. And abstained from making determinations based on unsettled Missouri criminal law. Judge Ross denied the appeal, but not because the Missouri law issue was unimportant or because the ruling was fit to government or to govern every non-party machine statewide. The court acknowledged that a reasonable person may debate the exercise and his exercise of his discretion, and he concluded that the proposed federal appeal wouldn't be controlling because TNT's remaining entitlement to attorney fees and disgorgement on count one did not depend on the fate of count seven. So he's saying, you know, count seven really doesn't matter to this case. Well, if that's the case, why'd you rule it that way? Why'd you rule on it at all? Because that's what you said first. And so you said it when you denied the interlocutory appeal. You said it when you denied the first part back in March of 2025, and when you said you wouldn't give them declaratory relief. And in between there, you issued declaratory relief anyway. And you didn't need to. So twice you said, I don't need that for the case to be finalized. But then you did it anyway. The court also denied certification to avoid piecemeal federal appeal when final judgment is pretty near. They're just waiting on an amount for judgment. But I saw their case docket. I mean, geez, we're talking about document 446, 440. We got 446 at least documents in the Pacer system out there. You can go out and click them all and read them and download them. And I've read a lot of them. I read quite a bit of that case. So the denied interlocutory appeal posture is pretty critical. The absence of interlocutory federal review doesn't convert his decision in this case into statewide Missouri law. It absolutely doesn't. And Hanaway, if she's saying it does, she doesn't understand the law, and she needs it explained to her better. She's taking an opportunity is what's happening here. It means only that the federal court wouldn't pause its own nearly finished case to allow a discretionary interlocutory appeal. They're saying, man, we're almost done. Wait till we're done, get the final judgment, and then appeal it. And
I don't think it matters anyway because, you know, it. Hell, I didn't have to make it, just like he said before. So I'm not sure what's going to happen in there. But if it's me, I'm rolling the dice and taking the appeal on that, no doubt. You know, of course, it's not me because I've been destroyed as an attorney anyway. But Torch and TNT, that decision doesn't bind every retailer, route operator, supplier, city, liquor license, veterans hall, fraternal organization, restaurant, convenience store, small business. It doesn't take out other manufacturers. The manufacturer in those particular Torch cases, where they looked at a specific set of machines manufactured by a company, I believe named Bunilla, and they had no chance games, pre-reveal games, video lottery style, fishing table games, or electronic amusement devices in Missouri. So it didn't create any sort of safe harbor procedure, a uniform inspection standard, any sort of discussion about liquor license renewal or any process for a non-party to contest the legality of a particular machine before their life is destroyed. You know, having had my life destroyed by a state actor, you know, after I had already engaged, you know, was engaging in my own, what do you call it? I don't know. Rosary, you know, counting the beads and stuff after I had already been penalized, then, you know, I'm already going through the forgiveness phases, the 12 steps of recovery. And that's not true. I wasn't, you know, through any of that. But it was after the fact. He destroyed me after the fact. You know, I risked all the way because I needed to risk it all the way. I did the right thing. It cost me allegedly a year, but what I didn't know is it would cost me my license forever. They weren't trying to disbar me. They were trying to, I don't know what, punish me. And the deal was for probation, and I didn't take it. It's like, screw you. That's nuts. Because I was fighting over a piece of property issue. It was a stupid argument Chief Disciplinary Counsel's office, and so what I got punished for was four minor BS things, and they're not BS, they're valid, but that's what I got punished for. But they turned it into I'm some kind of a criminal. That's absolutely wrong, and I will never submit to that because that's just wrong, especially when you don't get to defend yourself, which I did not. So maybe the Licensing Association will take aim at the Missouri Bar and the Supreme Court later. I doubt it. You know, that's, you know, what a pointless endeavor that is. But then they don't listen. Anyway, let's check and talk about deference now. You know, with all the deference that comes out, I think that, and it's never been interpreted yet. It hasn't been interpreted yet because it's too new. It just took effect last August 25th, is 536.140.3. And what she's doing is interpreting a statute, is our Hanaway and is our Templeton. They're interpreting, they've created their own interpretations of statute, not through rulemaking, not through anything else. They've put it. Now, I had somebody tell me the other day that the AG has the right to go in and interpret these things in her way. Well, everybody, you can do it. That doesn't mean you're not going to go to court later. You know, he said that statutorily she has some authority in that regard. She has the, you know, she can put out, you know, that like the Ethics Commission can put out an Ethics Department opinion, you know, where they put it out. Like the Judge Ross talked about the Gaming Commission general counsel interpretation that he put out in I don't remember when it was, I want to say 2021, that he was analyzing these machines, and he had stated that he thought they are illegal. So these distinctions, you know, are not just academic. St. Louis Magazine, in that article, reported that after February 2026, that order in federal court, that St. Louis County officials moved toward liquor license pressure for businesses with no chance machines. That same reporting structure describes business level uncertainty over the order meant for particular machines, particular locations. And later, St. Louis Mag report described Torch announcement their suspension of Missouri operations while leaving everything in place, and raised a practical question of what happens to machines not manufactured by Torch. So, you know, it's not just me asking this. It's St. Louis Magazine. You know, why? You know, what happens to machines that aren't Torch? Well, no, they get attacked. They get attacked without any analysis first. No analysis. No idea what's in there. You've just decided that this is it. Where's the training for the highway patrolman? Under one of the state legislature's options that they put out that I read, whatever the House bill was, one of the last 2 years, called for bringing on an additional, well, I don't remember, 70, 65 highway patrolmen to be trained and to be enforcement of these type of machine things. Highway patrolmen, okay? So, and there was another one that when they were discussed putting in a different agency. So, and they were going to tax it. I mean, they pay for all this with the tax that they're talking about, seizing the $250 million. So the growth of government. Right now, the tax was just a tax, right? It was just a tax. But now you have $250 million coming in. You got to spend it. So why don't we get another 75 highway patrolmen to be able to be trained and spend all that $250 million on hiring this one? And that makes the world go round too, you know, having the state with bigger power, you know, but at least somebody'd be trained to do it. You know, nobody is now. Nobody knows what's legal or illegal. They're making it up as he goes along. Oh, he's making it up as he goes along. That's another Monty Python. Perhaps we should talk some about that. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take a bit of a break. I believe I've talked enough about this. I wanted to get to some of the international discussion that is going in here. But before I break and go to a little bit of a music scenario, I think that people should get involved with their government. You know, I'm encouraged that people are doing, I even do it a little bit more. And I do it from a little bit of a different perspective. If you'd like to get MOLAG opinions on this, you can go out to MOLAG.org. Join the effort. You know, we need more people. I spoke with three potential additional clients. We've had quite a bit of interest in joining our association to defend people against this type of activity. And we have plenty already in operators, retailers, restaurants, places that have these machines, you know, and are going for the licensing. But MOLAG isn't only about licensing of alcohol, tobacco, because, you know, those... I could talk for days about the this ridiculous inspection form and the ATC, without due process, using criminal law to locationally establish somebody's character under there. So under Chapter 311, Chapter 407, they can use character, a person's character, to analyze their ability to have a license. And courts have interpreted character. Other people have interpreted character. And one of them is having been convicted of crimes or of moral turpitude or a felony or whatever. And most people say that having been convicted of a felony doesn't allow you to have a liquor license, right? But if you have a crime of moral turpitude, like, I don't know, you robbed a bank, but, you know, it wasn't a felony, or you, I don't know, stole from the Walmart and it wasn't a felony, that's still a crime of moral turpitude, because it was to either take for somebody, steal from somebody, or not. And the fact that it's not a felony isn't as big a deal, but it's still a crime of moral turpitude, of moral ability. It wasn't anything immoral, right? Like somebody using drugs because they're addicted. You know, that's not a moral framing, right? Anyway, the character analysis is locational. It's nonsense. It's crazy. Think about this. You put a machine, one of these machines, inside of a convenience store. And then ATC comes into the convenience store, and there's some ATC licensing agent comes in with his little checklist. And down on the list, number 14, 15, whatever the hell it is gaming machines, gambling machines. And he sees a machine that looks like an electronic slot machine, because he's been to the casino, by God, and he's seen some of them. And it looks like one. It's plastic. It's got a ticket generator that pushes out tickets on the bottom. So therefore, you know, his little checklist says this is a gaming machine. And he checks it. And then he comes up to the guy and he says, listen, I can't approve you. Not because you have the gaming machine. You know, it's not the gaming machine. It's the fact that you're breaking the law by having the gaming machine, and therefore you're breaking the law, and therefore you have bad character. And since you have bad character, you can't have the machine. You can't have a liquor license. No, that's a great leap of logic, but this is exactly what they are doing to local retailers as a tail twister. They're going to the convenience store and saying, you have a liquor license. But now I've said you're a criminal. Yeah, and you're going, but I'm not a criminal. There's confusion in the air. And they say, well, that doesn't matter. My interpretation is all that matters. I say you're a criminal and that you're breaking the law. But if you quit breaking the law, get rid of this machine, suddenly you don't have bad character. What? I either have bad character or I don't. You haven't charged me with this machine. Yeah, but do you want me to just take your license? How about that? How about I take your liquor license? That is exactly what is happening. That's what's happening. And so now they get to go into these places, and this is a concerted vice squad effort to go in there, not because you've committed a crime, but because they know they can take your liquor license. And so they threaten to take your liquor license. And by the way, it's all locational, because your bad character disappears as soon as you've committed the crime. But does your character disappear if you were convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor of moral turpitude 5 years earlier? No, because that has already happened. This is why the count exists about this nonsense in the county court in Cole County to interpret this. Because what they're doing is taking power they don't have. First of all, the ATC does not have the power to enforce criminal law. They only have the power to consider your character in whether or not you get a machine. But one guy, there's no analysis at the by some expert. There's no trial where you get to go and have a jury find you guilty or not guilty. There's one dude, some agent, some untrained agent, walks in, says, looks like you're gambling back here. Looks like you're selling that Kratom stuff and the Vice Squad needs to get you. And they're making an interpretation all on their own. You're breaking the law. Remember, police officers, this is unfortunate, and Catherine Hanaway for sure, they have a tendency to, you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. And so you're always guilty of something. You just, you know, we just got to find the right crime to charge you with, right? And so they go in there with a chip on their shoulder anyway. How can I screw with this illegal guy? Because I know he's got these machines. I don't know what these machines are, but you know what? If I accuse him of it, he's going to have to cave, because otherwise I'm going to take his license and he's going to lose 25%, a third of his revenue from alcohol. But you're destroying him anyway. You're taking away a percentage of his money from these machines. This is a complicated and critical issue. And people need to understand it. Because just because Catherine Hanaway says, gray area's over, doesn't mean that she knows what she's talking about. Okay? And I say she doesn't. She can come in and convince me. I'd be happy to talk to her. You know, but hell, I'd love to talk to her. I think... I'm a little bit on the critical side, you know, so what? And I don't like or dislike the woman. I don't care. Well, I don't want to say I don't care. I do care. I don't like this type of government actor, you know, who doesn't think before they act or they have an agenda. Wonder what hers is. Anyway, I don't want to kill. I wanted to get to Alexei Arestovich because I like him. But I like listening to him anyway. On the Ukraine things, because there's some big, big ticket items going on in the Ukraine debacle. So let me get you some music. I like listening to vocal trance, and we already gave you some Jethro, my Jethro Tull dude. And I think we're going to give you my techno Omer Deep, because I like it a lot. And then this one's only, how long is this? I might only play half of it. Or should I play it all? I played the Tiesto the other day, didn't I? Well, I'm gonna, there's some more Victor Tsoi. We love him. Let's get some music going into you and get you covered. We're going to listen to some dark techno is what I think. I could watch that stuff, listen to it for days. You know, bars in the United States are not like bars in Europe. That one is actually Sunset DJ Mix from Stockholm, Sweden. And tell you what, going to clubs over there is quite a bit different than going to clubs around here. And it's an experience that that I've had before. I find it quite entertaining and interesting because I like to people watch. And it's pretty good stuff, you know. Hang on a second. I got to refresh the screen here to get where I'm going to go. And I wanted to switch targets a little bit because I watched quite a bit of... news last night, and I'm telling you, I watched Alexei Arestovich, okay, and Alexei Arestovich is Ukrainian, but he's very critical of the Z monster, of the Green Goblin, Zelensky. He's pretty critical of him, and rightly so. The fact is, there were several things I watched that were of great interest to me. One was another guy who said, they fooled us again. That's what got me in. He said, they've fooled us again. And he was doing an analysis, which I sometimes do because I worked in arms control for so long, that going through this sort of an... We're always fooling them. That's what we do. That is our posture. We take diplomacy to a level of, well, you know, we don't have to tell them the truth. Well, why have diplomacy if you're not even willing to tell people the truth? If you base everything on lies and propaganda, maybe that's what they teach you in there. And so I've got some pretty good stuff from the Arestovich, and we probably won't get through it all, but... you know, let's talk about Sirsky, who's the general, commanding general in Ukraine. And he's been the commanding general now since, I think, mid-2024, something like that, when they sent the last guy off to England to be the ambassador. Got rid of him because he wasn't being successful. But Sirsky is now saying some stuff. And you never hear this guy talk publicly, but he's starting to make excuses about why they aren't prevailing on the battlefield. Regardless of what you think you're seeing on the news here in the United States, Ukraine is not winning the war because they can throw drones into Russia. They're losing steadily. And yesterday was some big movement in toward a couple of cities. But Sirsky gives us, he's a Ukrainian command. He talks about the Ukrainian problems on very plain terms. Sirsky is tied to giving two of the following warnings. First, Ukraine has huge manpower problems. They never talk about that. But finally, he's acknowledging it. He's saying that once the Russians have busted through, and there's some reports that they just busted through south of Kharkiv, and that they have come through, and they're just going to keep on running. They got 20, 30 kilometers in front of them. They're basically empty. And Sirsky says he's spread so thin that once they punch through, they're done. Russia, in the island that comes out in Zaporizhia, there's a big island on the river Dnieper that goes through there. So Zaporizhia is on both sides of the river, and in the middle of it is a big, I don't know, a Manhattan-style island in the middle. And what Russia has done over the last 2 weeks is they've been bombing the crap out of the power lines that because Zaporizhia is no longer being powered by the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant because Russia took that in 2022. And so the power has to come from the other side of the river. And now they can't get power to the eastern side of Zaporizhia because the Russians have taken out on this island the enormous complex of power lines that is on the island, you know, that comes across from one side. It goes. So basically the island's in the middle on the two sides of, so the river splits into two, and you got a big, island in the middle. But that island is used a lot for infrastructure sort of activities, like the power line and the substations that are in there. So they're blowing up all the substations and all the power lines. They have destroyed more than 200 gas stations all along the eastern part of the front. Now, there was a report I saw yesterday that said in that area of the anything east of the Dnieper, that overall Ukraine has somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 gas stations, 5 to 5,500. And that in the past 2 weeks, Russia has destroyed 200. And all of these are on the eastern side of the Dnieper River. So, as I've said from the very beginning, it wouldn't surprise me if Russia went all the way up to the Dnieper River and took care of this. And now Kiev's on the Dnieper as well. Up on the, it curves to the west pretty dramatically after Zaporizhia. And but I always thought that they'd go at least to Zaporizhia, get through all the way, and go up. And I think that is still the case. But the fact that Sirsky is saying we don't have the people to hold this off, that gas is an enormous problem in Ukraine. You don't hear about it because they're winning. They're sending drones into Russia. They're blowing up Russia's oil. Well, Russia's got more than Ukraine. They're at least on the certainly on the diesel side and certainly on the reconstruction side. And Russia's a hell of a lot bigger, you know. And I'm not saying they can absorb it, but that this isn't going to stop them. And so Sirsky says that they have huge manpower problems, and secondly, that Russia is preparing to pressure actually toward Kiev and Chernihiv. And I'm not saying that Kiev is going to fall. That's not the point. I'm saying that I talked about the Dnieper River several years ago and how that is a critical part because east of there, it's always been Russia. And it's always been Russian, more importantly, people. And so the point is that now we have a commander, a general, the commanding general of the military of Ukraine with enough reserves. You know, he doesn't have any. He has reserves problem. And he's going, look, they're past us. Remember, they sent him personally down to Konstantinivka to save Konstantinivka. And Konstantinivka is done. It's gone. Russia has it. You know, I told you yesterday they were already through it. So look at the map. I mean, Orekhov is under pressure. Zaporizhia is hit, you know, being hit in the rear. They're being taken out with the power on the in that island in between. Dobropolye is being penetrated. Malinovka is fallen near the Kramatorsk direction. And Kramatorsk is a big industrial conglomeration. Sumy is under pressure. Kupiansk is under pressure. And at the same time, Russia is trying to destroy all gas station and fuel webs behind the Ukrainian military. It's not one battle. It's exhaustion. They're exhausted. Ukraine can send drones into Russia. Ukraine can blow up a bridge. Ukraine can strike a factory. You know, these are important things too. but none of that answers Sirski's basic problem. Who holds the line? Nobody. And there's certainly not enough men, not enough fuel, not enough electricity, no vehicles. And now there are too many sectors under pressure. Way too many. They're falling. Up in North in Sumy, they're losing. They're losing everywhere. Drones might change the war, but they're not going to get rid of your manpower issues. And now we have Germany, all the Baltic states, freaking Finland, creating drone station. They say they want to change the war. You don't need nuclear arms pointed at each other. You need these drone stations all powered by Starlink. That's what you need. And so that's what they're doing. Even now, they're creating that environment. That is amazing to me. Let's see. Oh, damn it. I'm losing my place. Let's talk about the place. I mean, I could go through these places, but the Ukrainian side has been trying to sell the idea the drones have changed everything. And drones do matter. They do. And they're changing the war. But they don't eliminate the need for infantry, for fuel, for reserves, for evacuation, fortification, bridges, trucks, command stability. And by the way, why are you wasting them all bombing Russia? Civilian targets, blowing up apartments and schools and buses. That's the only reason for that, is a terror sort of engagement. Why aren't you using them to go against the troops on the front lines? That's what I don't get. If your strength is in drones and all you're doing is using your drones to send it into Russia, all it is a propaganda effort. That's it. You know, we're changing the war because we go after Russia in the back. That's it. That's all you got. And by the way, that's where Europe is going. They want war with Russia. They've been talking about it for forever. You know, they want that. Let's see. There was an interesting... So Margarita Simonyan, you guys all know I talked to her. You remember I told you about the guy who's now the ambassador to England? His name was Valery Zaluzhny, and he told Zelensky that he'd run for president if elections are held, and that Zelensky is trying to understand whether he's going to face serious competition. And Aristovich's comments about elections and Ukrainians abroad, he's saying Europe is going to insist that all Ukrainian passport holders, including those living abroad, have a chance to vote, and that elections that exclude Ukrainians abroad won't be accepted. Why is that? The election question is not academic. If Zaluzhny runs, Zelensky has a real rival. If Ukrainians abroad vote, the political map has definitely changed. If men at the front, men hiding from mobilization, refugees in Europe, and families broken by war all have a say, Kyiv's narrative is going to be much harder to control. So I don't know what to think of that. I'm not sure if because they allow them usually to vote abroad. They only limit people that are, they won't let the Ukrainians vote from Russia. Remember when we did the elections the last time they had elections? And the same thing happened in Moldova. By the way, that Sandu lady that runs Moldova, she's they're trying to get into the EU, and she's came out yesterday with a position statement that said, when Europe brings Russia to its knees and says that Europe and they start the negotiation process after Russia finally capitulates, that she wants the area between Ukraine and Moldova, a sliver of their country called Transnistria, which is a territory of Russia and has Russian troops on it, that they want that to be returned to Moldova, she says. And she wants the EU to force that. You know, what dream world does she live in? It's you know, quite the dream world, is all I'm saying. So apparently there's a Ukrainian energy company announced emergency power outages in Kyiv across all the districts from 5 to 10 a.m. And that's preparation for an expected massive Russian attack with large number of drones and missiles. Now, I've been hearing this for several days now, that Russia has limited its attacks to a couple hundred drones and missiles a night. And for a while, they were doing 800, doing something like that. So they're saving up for an enormous blitz to bomb the snot out of them. So the argument is that Kyiv's power cuts aren't simply because the grid is collapsing, but because they expect this same attack. And they're trying to reduce the damage by preemptively shutting down the grid. So Russia used 153 drones and missiles overnight. They continue to attack fuel and energy. And, strikes on multiple gas stations along the road between Dnipro and Kremenchuk and other gas stations near Kharkov, Horodnya, and which one is this? Shakhtarsky. And so there are a number of Ukrainian gas stations now well exceeds 200. And if there are 1,000 gas stations that were located in the eastern half of Ukraine, 20% of them are gone. And these are not random bombings. So this is an anti-mobility campaign, like I talked to you about before. Russia isn't just trying to blow things up. It's trying to make movement difficult or impossible. No fuel, no return trip, no safe parking places, no reliable depot, and no normal logistics. So you can't feed the guys either. So a Ukrainian vehicle might be able to drive east, but if it can't get any fuel when it gets there, it'll never be going back. And so that's a problem. I wanted to talk a little bit about Margarita Simonyan, and I watched an interesting statement that she gave in front of Roskongress, which is a Russian Congress, and it's a political event, and there were quite a few of them. That's where another guy put out a speech that I watched. It was about an hour and a half, and I don't even know who he was. I don't think I've watched him before, but he was a commentator, and I got sucked in clickbait because it said said they fooled us again, and he was talking about the West once again fooling people with Alaska, and he started with the point of view of Putin and Sergei Viktorovich Lavrov, and started with their points of view that, you know, once again all they do is play the delay game with us, and he started out with that, but then he talked about this fooling, and this is what a historic event is. Simonyan talks about it a different way. She says, and Arestovich supported this, by the way, he said something similar. He said, Ukraine shouldn't claim that Russia, because this is what they're doing, Ukraine, they shouldn't claim that Russia didn't have any connection to Rus, which is there's arguments about whether it's Kievan Rus or Rus, and basically the Russian people, the core of Russian beliefs, the dispute now that exists, which never existed before, is produced in three sentences: Belarus, Ukraine, and Russia, with related roots but different political and cultural paths. And Simonyan was talking about the forgetting of history, the recreating history, and talking about dehumanization, because shared memory is what makes humans part of a community. So the funny part is that here's Arestovich, a Ukrainian, and here's Simonyan, definitely Russian. Well, she's actually Armenian, but both are talking about memory. They just want different memories to be preserved. Arestovich wants Ukraine to claim that Rus-Ukraine, you know, to claim Rus-Ukraine is what was important, and the Rus-Ukraine is Kievan Rus, according to him, and resist Russia's monopoly over common inheritance. But the Ukrainians, especially those west of the Dnieper River, west of Kyiv, they're extremely nationalist side. They don't want anything to do with Rus. They don't want anything to do with Kievan Rus or otherwise. The only people that say that are people trying to sell you something. And other than that, they've gotten rid of the history. And they've always said the Ukrainians were the supreme, not the Russians. You know, and it's kind of interesting historically to go through this, because once again, it's the same thing. It's the Polish saying yesterday that we're not, you know, we don't want Ukraine in here if they're going to allow these Banderovs to be, you know, banners all over the place and honor this genocidal attacks on Poland. And forget history. They don't want to forget history. And they want to point out that these nationalist behaviors and destroying of cultures was very much Ukrainian. Ukrainian Nazis are some of the worst. And they exist, trust me. But Simonyan says the West has trained entire populations to forget the inconvenient history. And both understand the same thing. History isn't a museum subject. It is power. And if you can tell people, you know, what you have on that, that you are the sole arbiter of what is history, which is what the West is trying to do in Ukraine for 30 years, and they've eliminated all things Russian as if they're not there. And Simonyan, what she said, her core is that the historical amnesia of Europe... And what she calls it is the memory getting knocked out. You know, we're knocking out memory, not only in Europe, but across the so-called world. And she gives two main causes, main reasons for this. It was an interesting segment that I listened to, about 15, 20 minutes. First, she says that people today are just too lazy to learn history and educate themselves, and the education system does nothing but enable that laziness. Now, that's harsh. She says that history should be treated as a nation-forming thing because of shared history. It's what forms people, mentality, structure, everything. Second, she gives examples of historic ignorance. Okay? Now, this was interesting to me. She said Japanese polling... where people did not know who dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And her American school anecdote where the high school seniors that did not know exactly what occurred on July 4th of 1776. Now, I don't know that I believe that. That's, you know, propagandistic, but I'm sure, you know, it's funny when people do those interviews on the street. You ever get on YouTube and watch those? How stupid a lot of people are. And nobody pays attention. They just muddle through. And so, but Japanese polling, they're saying that there's a lot of people who don't understand history. She says that she met with an American teacher who did not know that it was the U.S. that bombed Belgrade in 1999. And thought that is just Soviet propaganda, and you have to go search it online. And these are teachers. And the teachers aren't shocked that America bombed Belgrade. They're upset that they don't know it. Well, nobody ever announced it. They didn't tell us that that was our war. We didn't know, because we've been engaged in wars all over the world that don't get told to people. You know, they don't get told until it's too late. You don't get told about that stuff. So Simonyan's point is a pretty good one. She's not saying that people forget dates or, you know, that sometimes I'd have to go back and re-review myself. But that once people lose a shared historic memory, they can be made to believe almost anything, you know, and they're doing that. They're trying to make like Hitler had a good reason to go against Russia, that he was going against Stalin. That it really was all about, it wasn't anything to do with killing off the Jews. I mean, this is going around. There are people that believe it. And trust me, we push that agenda here too. We want to make them, you know, in bad news. The point is that once this historic memory is gone, people will believe anything. If you don't know who bombed Hiroshima, If you don't know what happened on July 4th, 1776, and if you don't know that the U.S. bombed Belgrade in 1999, then you're not really a citizen of the world in command of your own history. You're a consumer of whatever narrative they place in front of you this week. This is where the NGOs and the foreign-funded history projects like the U.S. Agency for International Development really mattered. Because guess who funded all the textbooks, the media, the civil society programs, museums, and democracy education in Ukraine for the last 30 years? All to the destruction of anything Russian. They're not teaching facts. They're shaping the memory of Ukraine. And whoever shapes that memory gets to shape the political identity and turn them westward, which is all that they've been trying to do in Ukraine for 30 years. I'm not saying it's too late now. They've already done it. But our Western actions are in vast, in large part to blame for that. Now, remember, Simonyan has her own state perspective too. She's not neutral, but her point is still quite valid. Historic ignorance makes people easy to manipulate. And everybody in the government in the West knows that. Why do you think they put so much funding, dark money, into U.S. Agency for International Development? Because you could have all these NGOs. You know how many podcasts and broadcasting centers and media centers they have funded in Ukraine? They're funding them everywhere to push the American democratic vision, right? And just because Simonyan is her own state perspective, and she's very locked into her own state perspective, doesn't mean she's lying. Certainly not from her perspective, right? And Russian officials know the same thing that she knows. Ukrainian officials know that. And everybody fights a narrative war instead. And what we're involved in are narrative wars. That's where we are. That is where we are. I'm very excited, like I said at the beginning of the show, that my visa has been approved by the Russian consulate, and I'm going to figure out where the hell I go. You know, I haven't been to a sanatorium in 2 years now, and I think I might try to find a sanatorium. So when I go to St. Petersburg, it'll be winter. It'll be freaking cold, I'm sure. I'm going over New Year's and Christmas. So remember, their holidays are in reverse. So Christmas is actually January the 7th over there. Their Rosh Deswo is New Year's comes first, and then comes the holiday. So they're 2 weeks where, basically in America, from the 15th of December to the end of the year, we're a mess. We don't do anything. Nothing gets done. And the same thing goes on over there in the opposite. Man, if you had a month, it'd be great to spend the 2 weeks here, 2 weeks there. That's my plan, is not do anything for a month. There's plenty to talk about in this regard. I want to bring up some more about what's happening tomorrow. Today is Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, is it not? And the biggest day in radio here on damnradio.com. You get to come up with Jimmy Tebow, the damn swag, here in a tiny little bit. There's some stuff going on. If you go out to demradio.com/schedule, you can get all of the shows out there and see what's coming. Today we got Gabby Hayes at 11 to 1. We have JR from 2 to 4. I'm thinking this is going to be a lot of fun. Friday's a big-ass show, July the 3rd. We have Civic Outlaws, that's me, in the morning. We have Nadine at 9. I like listening to her. I think she's entertaining and very well-informed. And a really big shoe with JR. We have A Search of Solutions with Josh Butterfield. We have Josh and Polly with Eye on Solutions. The Eye of the Beholder with DJ Polly, and then 60 Hours of Rock coming after that.